From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in August on C-SPAN. Heather McGee is the president of Demos Action, which is a progressive public policy organization that advocates for equality. Most of her appearance that day on C-SPAN focused on policy, but things changed when C-SPAN took a live phone call from a man named Gary. Gary explained that he's a white male, he lives in Fletcher, North Carolina, and he said he is prejudiced against black people. And he asked McGee, who is black, how he might eliminate his own prejudice. It was a remarkable moment, and McGee's response went viral. Gary's admission was an acknowledgement of explicit bias. He at least was aware of it, and he wanted to change it. But what about implicit bias? What about the kind of bias that we're not aware that we have? How can we better understand and even uncover our own prejudices that are constructed through our experience, our learning, our socialization? Melanie Funches has given public presentations on the subject of implicit bias. You might have seen her TEDx Flower City talk on the issue. And given how we've been hearing this term often, implicit bias, in recent days, I thought it'd be helpful to have Melanie come in and discuss it with us at length. By the way, she's the Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association. She's involved in a range of community organizations. And I said, you know, how do you want to be introduced given all the things that you do in this community? And you said, I'm just Melanie and I do the work. So Melanie, who does the work, it's great to see you here.
I'm great to be here. Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, I thought your TEDx talk was remarkable, and you shared your sort of your own experience. But can we start with a definition? When we hear implicit bias, what does it mean?
Implicit bias, some people call it implicit social cognition. It's these thoughts that we have in our head that we don't control. You know, it's these thoughts that show preferential thoughts toward one group over another. So the best way I can do an example of this is when things that you don't see that, how can I explain this? Do you know how, I'm going to use an example that has nothing to do with people.
Okay.
You know how when you're looking for a new car and you don't buy, and you look around and you see this car on the lot. Oh my God, that's a great car. I've never seen this car. You buy the car and you're driving the car. Now everybody has your car. You're seeing the car everywhere, yeah. Right? It's like you didn't notice this thing before. Now you notice it. So with implicit bias, these are things that that are existing in us that we don't see. Like there's an example that it's not my personal story, but there's a gentleman named Questlove who is the band leader for a band called The Roots. They are this house band for Jimmy Fallon.
Yep.
Questlove did an article in The Atlantic where he talked about how he lives in this building. And in New York City, they have these doorman buildings that have high security. Celebrities live in them. And in his building, the convention was you had to scan your card, a key card, to be able to push any button on the elevator to go to your floor. So what would happen was the first person getting the elevator will put their card in and they will hit the floors for everybody else who gets in to make it go faster. So he gets on the elevator. And this woman comes in behind him, and he hits his floor, and he asks the woman, what floor, please? And she says, oh, no, we're fine. He's excited because he says, this woman is fine, right? And he's like, oh, gosh, I'm going to have to do the welcome wagon, get an apple pie, bow chicka, wow, wow. This is literally what he says. And so he's playing Candy Crush, and he's trying to get his next level on Candy Crush, so he's not really talking to her on the way up. And he goes to get off the elevator and he realizes that he has not been kind to the woman. So he stops to open the door so she can come out. And he says, no, never mind. The woman says, no, never mind.
The woman says, no, never mind.
Okay. And he steps back and the doors close. And as the door's closing, you can see her reaching toward the buttons to push her floor. What he realizes is that the woman, and even though it's known, if she lives in the building, she knows that the intense screening you have to go through to live in the building. If he has a card, he lives in the building. Because that's the only people who can get the key card is you have to live in the building. All she saw him was as a big black man and felt unsafe. That's implicit bias. The woman's bias saw Questlove, who people see on TV five nights a week, saw him as unsafe. And that's how it impacted him, because even though he was thinking about how he could flirt with the lady, how he could take her a pie, thinking that this is his new neighbor, she's thinking, how do I stay safe on this elevator where he posed no threat to her?
Is that similar to, Melanie, a story that Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, who was actually pretty active in the recent presidential campaign supporting Hillary Clinton, he said that after Trayvon Martin, he had to ask himself, if I'm walking down the street and I see a black man with a hoodie, am I likely to walk to the other side of the street?
Absolutely. It's the things that we do. You know, it's if you see young people, a bunch of young people, do you cross the street? Is if you see, you know, if you're hearing, this is something else. If you see me, I'm a large African-American woman. I'm tall. I'm 5'10", which is tall for a woman. If I'm wearing heels, I'm taller. And I wear, a lot of times I wear head wraps that add 2 inches or better to my height. If you see me advocating for something, do you see me as angry? Do I become the angry black woman wherein if, let's say, another woman who was petite and white was doing saying the exact same things with the exact same veracity, would you see her as being an advocate? These are these biases that are in our subconscious. And they come from, a lot of times, they come from the way we were raised and things that we've heard and the messaging that we've received. So, and everybody has them. The one thing I want people to understand that implicit biases, everybody has them. Black people, white people, old people, young people, we all, if you are human and you are walking the earth, you have implicit biases. You know, like, I have always had a bias against mayonnaise. Right. Because when I was a kid, no one could tell me what mayonnaise was. I didn't find out till I was older that mayonnaise was made out of eggs. Because all I saw was this, it was white and it was gelatinous. That's how I saw it as a kid. So whenever I saw mayonnaise like on a sandwich, I wouldn't eat it because I assumed it didn't taste good. You know, that's, I mean, it sounds like something silly, but
you feared what you didn't know.
I feared what I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So what happens is with implicit biases, a lot of times we hear these messages, and if we do not have a personal experience to help us to balance what we hear, we go with the fear of what we don't know. You know, I was just sharing a story with a friend of my, with somebody about how I have a friend who lives in the mountains of Tennessee. And I was, and people who know me know I work a lot, so I needed a break. And she says to me, come up on my mountain. Come to my house up on my mountain. And I said to her, I can't come. And she said, why? I said, because I have to get to your mountain. And she didn't understand. I said, many of the people who live around you, you do national work with me. And so a lot of the work I do takes me around the country. So I get to see a lot of people. And there's a group of us who do this kind of work. So I said, you get to see all kinds of people, but the people who live around you, they may never have seen live and in person a 5'10", 200-plus-pound black woman with big red dreadlocks. And the only images that they get of people who look like me are things like cops and these different images, and they are taught to be afraid of me. And what do people do when they're afraid? People react out of fear. Implicit biases come from our messaging. It's not that, it just is. So sometimes you will have a bias against, people will have a bias against African-Americans. And it's based upon the fact that you've heard all these messages that said that African-Americans are dangerous, that we are all these different things, but they are based in this message that you're receiving. And if you've not had a real life experience to counteract that, that's what you've got.
So as we talk about understanding our implicit biases, then, well, we're going to talk about how we try to deal with it, how we grapple with it.
Yes.
Before we do that, can I ask you to share a little bit of your own personal story? Because I think sometimes our audience may think, okay, well, you're going to walk on the other side of the street. But at the end of the day, you know, that's walking on the other side of the street. Obviously, I think we don't want to minimize any implicit bias.
Right.
Because that could impact, just think of a young black male walking down the street, and he sees that people don't want to be near. I mean, I can't even imagine.
That happened. That's my son. My son's like 6'1". You know, sweet young man, you know, and if he's walking, you know, he smiles. He's very, you know, very cordial. But people see him as a black male. And I fear for him because people can think that he's going to do something. My son wouldn't hurt a flea. But people will see it. Like for my husband in 2000 was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, was given 2 weeks to live. And one of the reasons that he got the diagnosis so late is that when we were in the hospitals trying to find out what was wrong with him. He was in the hospital for a couple of months, and the doctors kept trying to check him for HIV or sarcoidosis, or there was this other condition that I can't remember. And they kept retesting him for these same three diseases. And I said to the doctors, I said, why are you checking him for these three things? He said, well, he's a young Black male. And I was like, what? I mean, they went so far as to try to kick me out the room so that he could be feeling free to tell them if he was a secret IV drug user or had secret sex with men. And I'm like, really? And finally, I had to say to them, test my husband for the things that white people get. And when I said that to them, after they were all over the shock, they actually did it. And that's how he got his cancer diagnosis. But the fact of the matter was that my husband could have died because of the bias of the doctors. All they saw him was as a 32-year-old, otherwise healthy Black man. What are the things that afflict Black men? And they said, well, HIV, sarcoidosis, which is a lung condition, and this other thing. And I'm like, but cancer affects everybody. But in their mind, they were looking at quote unquote Black diseases. So they were only looking at Black diseases. And because our interpretation guides our intervention, they were only testing for those things while my husband is dying of cancer. These implicit biases can cost people their lives. But what I want people to understand is that it's a learned behavior. We are not born with these biases. We learn them. And anything that is learned can be unlearned. So, I mean, there's things that we can do to unlearn those behaviors. You know, people say, well, Melanie, you just said, you know, we hear all these messages, but once you pick up something, you call yourself on your own stuff. If you're seeing the young men and you're walking towards the street and you're getting ready to cross the street, say, wait a minute, why am I crossing the street? Have they done anything to warrant me crossing the street? You know, have they said anything to me? Have they looked at me any kind of way? Have they done anything? Is there any fact around why I'm doing what I'm doing? And if we start to call ourselves on those things, that's one of the things that we can do. We can also look at putting ourselves in situations. A lot of times our biases are based in the unknown. Like I said, like my friend who lives in Tennessee, there are people who had never seen people like me. So put yourself in situations where you're with people who are not like yourself. You know, I tell people the best way to get to know and understand, I work with young people a lot, and people are always bashing millennials, bashing young people, saying that they're this. Get to know some. Go be in a situation. Put yourself into a situation where you're around people who are different than you, and start to make relationships. We must make these relationships. And once we make the relationships, even when these things still come up, we have other information that we can draw on in our minds to say, oh, no, that's not right. And then we can make better choices.
My guest is Melanie Funches. And listeners, I'd love to hear from you this hour. Let's talk about implicit bias. Let's talk about our own prejudices. Let's talk about how to deal with that. Maybe experiences you've had, successes or failures in dealing with this, how it's impacted you. Or maybe, hey, maybe you hear this and you think, that's not me. I disagree. Not everybody has it. You want to call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Melanie, I know you saw the article on Vox.com by German Lopez, and the title was this: Research says there are ways to reduce racial bias. Calling people racist isn't one of them. And I want to read from this article and get your take on it if I could. So I'm just going to quote the article first. Quote, the first thing to understand is how white Americans, especially in rural areas, hear accusations of racism. While terms like racist, white privilege, and implicit bias intend to point out systemic biases in America, for white Americans, they're often seen as coded slurs. These terms don't signal to them that they're doing something wrong, but that their supposedly racist attitudes, which they would deny having at all, are a justification for lawmakers and other elites to ignore their problems. Imagine, for example, a white man who lost a factory job due to globalization and saw his sister die from a drug overdose. due to the opioid painkiller and heroin epidemic, situations that aren't uncommon today. He tries to complain about his circumstances, but his concerns are downplayed by a politician or racial justice activist who instead points out that at least he's doing better than black and brown folks if you look at broad socioeconomic measures. Maybe he does have some level of white privilege, but that doesn't take away from the serious problems he sees in the world today. Telling him to confront his own racism will get you absolutely nowhere, end quote. What do you make of that?
To me, it's never an either-or thing. This is a matter of both and. When I read the article, I was, you know, saying don't call people out. You know, it's like there are times when it's necessary to call people out on their stuff. It just is. There are other times when it's necessary to try to engage people in a conversation. Like the study that they quoted here in this article talked about anti-gay and trans bias. And they had people who were LGBT come and do this canvassing and enter these conversations. My first question was, did the canvassers and the people they were canvassing share a racial identity? Because the fact of the matter is that when you come to looking at biases, if I'm gay or I'm lesbian, you know, if I'm a lesbian, you may not be able to look at me. You cannot look at me and know with certainty that I'm a lesbian. If I'm trans, you may not be able to look at me and know for certainty that I'm trans. If we share, if that's the only thing that's differing that you can see off us and you can't see that, and you can look at me and say, well, we're the same initially, that creates a lower level of tension into which I can enter you into a conversation. And then we can begin to make relationship. But if we are different from the jump, from the moment you look at me, the first thing you see in me is you see my difference, that can heighten your biases. That can trigger your biases. And in your biases being triggered, it can close off that window for having that conversation. So my thing is that there's no one silver bullet. There's no one thing saying, no, we should never call people out or we should always call people out. This goes on a situation by situation basis to understand where we are and what is going on a particular situation. There are times when people are doing things that are egregious and they need to be called out in the moment because the behavior needs to stop. There are other times where I've been in that situation where I've talk to people and I've entered to a conversation and found some common ground with them and began to talk to them and make them aware. And they were like, that is messed up. I'm sorry. And I've seen that happen. But when you decide that your only tool is going to be a hammer, everything's going to be a nail. We've got to employ every tool at our disposal to get at this bias.
We've got just about all the phone lines filled up, so why don't we take some phone calls if we could? I'm going to start with Wendy in Rochester. Go ahead, Wendy.
Hi. I just want to say first off that I'm sorry about the delay in the diagnosis of your husband, and I hope that things went well with him.
Oh, he's fine. he survived.
Good.
Thank you.
Sorry about the delay. Good. And I want to say that I have arthritis. It has for 20 years, and it took a long time to figure out what I have. I have three kinds of arthritis, and I have inflammatory arthritis and osteoarthritis. I have another kind of arthritis, and it took a long time to figure out what I had, and I actually was the one to diagnose that kind of arthritis, and I was sorry that I missed it for so long. And that third kind of arthritis I have is gout, and nobody thought about it, including myself, because it is a diagnosis typically seen in men, but it can be seen in women. So nobody was thinking about it, including my own physician. And so I don't know that would be called a bias, but people don't think about these things because it's not just a bias, but these are things that have been studied. And I think something similar happened with your husband in that it's not just a bias, but these are statistics. So maybe it was a bias in your husband, but it's also things that are statistically significant. So they were thinking statistics. exactly what was could have been possible with your husband. And I'm sorry they didn't think even further what could have statistically been happening with your husband. And statistically, maybe they were thinking statistically maybe he had AIDS, or statistically what, that he had sarcoidosis and whatever the other diagnosis was. But I think statistically it was possible that he had cancer as well, and they weren't thinking that.
All right, Wendy, why don't you jump in and respond there, Melanie? Go ahead.
The thing is, I understand about statistics, and I agree with you that when doctors are trained, that they are trained to see what is most statistically most likely. Where this turned into a bias is that because my husband was Black, and this is what they said, because he was Black, they limited their search. So once they tested and these things did prove to not, he proved to get negative tests for all of these things, you move on to what has less likelihood. So if I test you, if I'm saying that you have these things, and then I don't keep retesting and thinking it can only be these things, because these are the things that happen to Black people. That's what happened with my husband. So it's not just that they tested, it's that they kept retesting and they didn't broaden their search. And I had to actually tell them to broaden the search as if he were a white man, because lymphoma is one of the cancers that young people get. That people get in their late 20s and early 30s. It's high, and all of his symptoms, he had an atypical presentation according to the doc, but there were a number of his symptoms that were red flags to say, you need to check for cancer. But they didn't check it because it wasn't on the list of Black people things. And that's what they said. They were like, because he's a 32-year-old Black man.
All right, let me get Lynn and Webster next up. Go ahead, Lynn.
Hi, I wanted to comment on both things. Woman in her 60s, a white woman, and I wanted to comment on the elevator story, because I had a completely different take on that story. As she was telling the story, I'm thinking that the woman that got on the elevator is some kind of a criminal and is going to rob the building because she didn't have her card out. It never even occurred to me that the Black man was doing something wrong. So not everyone has the same biases.
Right, and this.
I'm not saying we don't have implicit biases. We do, but and as well, and I'm a healthcare provider as well, retired now. But we are trained to look at what's commonly happening in certain people, and cancer doesn't commonly happen in anyone at 32 years old. That wouldn't be the first thing they'd look for. I'm glad that they finally did look for it, but it certainly wouldn't be on the first thing to look for a Black or a white person.
Okay, Melanie, go ahead.
And the thing is, when the story that happened to Questlove, this was the story that he told. So this is the story how he saw it through his eyes. And the thing is that given the situation, I'm just telling the story how he saw it through his eyes. And it could be that she was doing something, but she couldn't get off the floor, whatever, however this goes. But it's about how we are impacted. You know, if... The fact is people do have biases, and you didn't see it that way, but this is how he saw it, and this is how he was impacted and how he felt. You know, sometimes we all see things differently, but the fact is the bias does exist, and if the bias didn't exist, he wouldn't have had any information for him to have made that inference in the first place. But this is something that, based upon a situation that he had had and he had experienced before.
And to Lynn's comment about, well, she didn't have the same bias— Every person's different. Our biases are probably like snowflakes, right? You know, we may be more biased in certain ways and less than others. And then for the next person, it's different. We're all different, I guess.
Yes. And the thing is, everybody has them, and they're different, and they have differing degrees for everybody. And what I'd ask people to do, if you want to see this and find out for yourself, Harvard University has Project Implicit, and they have an implicit bias test. So if you Google Harvard implicit bias, you'll get a link to take you to the test. And it's a quick test that you can take on your computer with your mouse, and it can show you where your biases are. And there's a ton of them. It's not just one.
You think it's pretty effective?
I think it's very effective. I use it in national trainings that I've done and have people to take it. And it's all kinds. It's like age and weight and disability. It's not just racial. It's all different kinds of biases. Because what I want people to understand is that these biases are not just racial biases. We're talking about racial biases, but there's all kinds of biases that happen.
Well, and to that point, here is David on Twitter who writes, Evan, reading Hillbilly Elegy, I realize people have biases against people from Appalachia as well.
Absolutely. I mean, people, biases are biases. It's to or for anything. You know, you hear different terms that are used around different kinds of people. And a lot of these things are based in biases.
All right, back to the phones. And this is Pat in Rochester. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi, Melanie.
Hey,
good
Pat.
Good to hear you.
I'm great.
One of the things I wanted to bring out, I missed the very first few minutes, but I didn't think that you talked about how biases can be formed by what we don't hear and we don't see as much as by what we do hear and do see. For instance, if you were to grow up in an all-white neighborhood, attend an all-white school, that sends a message to a child that these people that don't look like them are other, and it forms certain erroneous conclusions in their minds that they don't even know are there. The same with, like, textbooks that always show white people in the upper situation. And then, you know, things like as simple as the fact that if you go and look at government pictures, you'll see all these white men. And just in recent times, do you see any smattering of women or people of color or whatever? And that all of this to the child is glaring and says things that we have no idea are being said to us.
Pat, that's absolutely true. The fact is, it's not just what we're told, but what we see is what we don't see.
Yes.
And so in that creation of other, you know, you put, let's say you put it where you live in a very homogeneous thing, where you live where everybody's the same. And you go to school, everybody's the same. You go to church, everybody's the same. You go to your supermarket, everybody's the same. And then when you hear about these other people, you hear about them in these negative ways. You know, you don't have anything to counterbalance that. Something that, like I've talked about before, you need a counterbalance, and you have nothing to counterbalance that with. So you form these ideas that this person is other, and because the way that we are culture, we think dichotomously. So if something is good, something else, the other thing must be bad.
That's right.
You know,
that's
if these people are winners, these people must be losers. You know, that's the way we do, and so we create others, and if we're good, they must be bad.
Right.
And
right.
I mean, and we, in a lot of times, and these things are just unconsciously formed in us as we grow.
Absolutely. And it isn't just according to race, too. It can be like with the men who are always pictured in the government roles and the CEOs and stuff. This gives a message about women. And if you never have any contact with gay people, then you have another message. And if you live in a middle class suburban neighborhood, you have a message about the poor. And so anything that isn't represented in your daily life is sending a message.
Absolutely. There's all different kinds of biases. Like, I remember growing up hearing people talk about women as the weaker sex. And I said, how is that if we're pushing out, if I push out a 10-pound baby, okay, I don't think that I'm weak. You know, that takes some effort. I've done it 4 times. It takes some effort, you know. So, I mean, we talk about, you know, all these messages that we get. It's about all different kinds of difference. And unless we have situations, you know, that we can counterbalance with our real lives, you know, or when we talk about what is women's, people talk about men's work versus women's work. You know, and how people make, you know, when they see strong, you see The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, you know, they say he's strong. But when you see a woman who's muscular and strong, they say, well, wait a minute, she, you know, we talk about femininity, all these biases that we have. It's not just about race, you know, but race is one of the very prevalent ones, because I tell people all day long, I cannot hide my difference. When I get up in the morning, I wear glasses. And for people who know me well, that I am blind without, I mean, I am very visually challenged without my glasses. So when I get up in the morning, I can't see my own facial features in the mirror without my glasses. So all I can see is my brown skin. So what I always say is I'm black first, because I can't even, if someone was to show me a picture of how I see myself without my glasses, I could not discern whether I was male or female, because that's just how blurry things are without my glasses. So that being said, You know, that's the thing I can't hide. When I walk in the room, that's what people see first. They see that I'm brown.
Let's get our only break of the hour, and the phone's still ringing. We'll come back to your phone calls with Melanie Funches, who is my guest talking about implicit bias. And this conversation continues. If you missed Melanie's TEDx talk on Flower City, it's online, and we'll post it on our Twitter feeds as well, where she tells not only her story, but talks a little bit more about these issues. It's been shared, been viewed tens of thousands of times now. But we continue with that and some of your phone calls after this short break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, first hour, is it time for New York State to welcome Uber and Lyft and ride-sharing services? We'll talk about the pros and cons and hear all sides in the debate over Uber. Then in our second hour, Water for Uganda, a fundraiser designed to bring rainwater collection tanks and help those in need far away. We'll tell you all about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. In our short break, Melanie said something that actually, for me, I'm going to say what you just said. It helped reaffirm some of what I say about journalism, and then you can talk about what you were talking about. Once in a while, I hear listeners say, well, the media is so biased, we need to go back to a time when the media was unbiased. And I always say, there is no such thing as an unbiased journalist. We are human beings. We have biases. We have ideas about the world. The most important thing a journalist can be is self-aware of their biases. As a talk show host, I need to be self-aware of my bias so I don't always stack a panel in a certain way, or I don't never invite certain voices. I know since the election, some listeners have said, boy, you've heard some voices that I don't know why you had this person or this person. And trust me, I understand some of the sentiment, but I would say I'm trying to confront any bias that I might have to make sure I'm not shutting out voices. So I don't really believe in unbiased journalism. I believe in recognizing your bias and confronting it in a way that is as fair as you can possibly be. And what triggered this was when Melanie mentioned during our short break that this extends, what, to the judiciary, to others?
Yes, because we are all humans first. We all have biases, even people who have sworn to be impartial, like judges. You know, judges have biases because they're human. All the things we've talked about impact us all. So they impact our law enforcement officers. They impact our judges. They impact people who work in media because those are jobs. You know, before these people were judges, before they became lawyers, before they became, you know, journalists, before they became law enforcement officers, they were kids running around in the playground. They were young adults going to school. So we all got these messages. And the key to us is to recognize and to be able to recognize that we have these biases, see them, and to do things to make sure that we can counteract them.
All right, let's get back to the phones. And I'm going to go to Betty in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Betty.
Hi. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Harvard implicit bias test because I took it many years ago. I kind of had been raised to be, quote unquote, not racist. But grew up, obviously, in a society that is very racist. And I took those tests after doing several years of anti-racist activist work and was shocked and embarrassed and disturbed by the fact that it showed that I had a very strong bias against Black people. And I recently took it again after more years doing that kind of work and was pleasantly surprised that I don't have quite such strong biases. But I guess I just wanted to lend a voice to the idea that it is something that we can overcome, and it is very possible, and it does take a lot of real soul-searching and effort, but it is something that we can do.
Betty, I really, first of all, admire you for calling a public radio show and just putting it out there that you took this test and you had results that probably shocked you and that you weren't proud of, but that you feel you can change. So let me just ask you briefly, and then I'll kick it over to Melanie. You know, we talked earlier about how, you know, this Vox.com article, some people feel attacked if you bring up the fact that everyone has biases. I think what Melanie does so well is Melanie reminds people that everybody has biases and that, you know, we all have to maybe work harder to try to recognize what they are. But Betty, when you bring up your story with, you know, friends, colleagues, do you get the same sense that people are just as open to owning it and dealing with it, or do you find resistance?
No, most people are very resistant. They don't want to acknowledge, because we know that being a racist is bad. We know that's a bad thing. And even people who are racist know that's a bad thing. And so we don't want to be associated with that. And I think it's very painful and very difficult for people to say, oh, that is part of who I am. and even more difficult to actually start addressing it.
Well,
especially if you are in your whiteness rewarded, you know, and don't have to deal with that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for the phone call, Betty. And why don't you stay on the line? I'll let Melanie respond, and I'll let our listeners know. We've tweeted a link to the Harvard Implicit Bias Test. So if you want to check it out, at MMacMedia, that's Megan Mack, and I'm at Evan Dawson on Twitter, if you want to take a look at that. Go ahead, Melanie.
Betty, thank you so much for being honest and being courageous and saying your truth. Because the one thing that I want to take out of what you said is these are learned behaviors and they can be unlearned. So you took the test at one point in time and you thought you had done your work. You know, a lot, and we all do this. We think I've done my work. You know, I've read my books. I did this thing. I recognize my privilege. I'm good. You know, and then you took your test and you got a surprising result. But you didn't stop there. And I thank you for that. You went and did more work. You said, okay, I got to dig a little bit deeper. And you did some more work. And so some years later, after you'd done some more work, you took the test again. And you saw that your biases had lessened. And so what that says and the message I want people to take from that is any learned behavior can be unlearned. But we have to take deliberate, intentional steps and do some deliberate, intentional work around reducing those biases. And like I said before, getting in places with other people, making relationships with people who are not like you, reading some books, learning and deepening your knowledge, reading articles. There is a proliferation of information nowadays around these subjects. And if you want to know, Google it. Google is an incredible tool, you know, and find out. And I just want to say thank you again, because it shows that this work can be done. This is not an impossible task.
Betty, was there any single thing that you did over the years that you think has helped you with this?
Honestly, moving to very diverse neighborhoods where I had neighbors and friends who come from a variety of backgrounds, religious and ethnic and racial, that made a huge difference.
Thank you for the phone call, Betty.
Thanks so much, Betty.
Really great. And boy, it's like Melanie said earlier in the hour that what we learn can be unlearned. And Betty's call just teed that up. I couldn't illustrate the point.
And I don't know Betty, y'all.
Yeah, no, that was
not planned.
Call.
That was not planned. I don't know Betty. But it's true. Anything that can be learned can be unlearned. Like I said earlier about mayonnaise, I love potato salad. And guess what? There's mayonnaise in it. You know, I've learned I love different types of dips. You know, I had a learned behavior that I see this, I don't like it. I unlearned it. Now, do I still have a bias? Do I have it on my sandwiches? No. But I've lessened my bias against mayonnaise by bringing it into relationship with other things that I like tuna, you know, like potato salad, like macaroni salad. And I know people say, well, Melanie, that's food. But biases extend across things. And if we can do it, if I can do it with mayonnaise, we can do it with people.
NPR has a podcast called Invisibilia, which did an episode on fear. And one of the premises that they examined was, can you unlearn fear of snakes, of whatever it is that you're scared of? And one of the things that drives fear is not understanding.
Absolutely.
You know, and that was, you can talk about if you're scared of spiders. What are you scared about? Are you scared about how quick they zig and zag or their body shape? How come they're shaped like that? And what they found was, in general, if you learn and dig into understanding something more, no matter what it is, you can lessen your fear of it. So I've got to deal with whales. I'm scared of whales and deep sea water. I don't know. Whales they're hard to understand for me. They're very scared of whales.
But they sing beautiful songs.
They do. I should probably start with the whale music.
Try with whale songs.
I should. Very much so.
And think about Finding Dory. Think about Dory. You have young kids. You know, I know it's a cartoon, but the whale helped them to help Dory and Marlin to find Nemo. So, you know. Yeah.
All right, Reese, if you're listening, we're going to watch Dory. Finding Dory, right?
Finding Dory, and it can help you.
All right, Jay in SOTUS. Next up with Melanie Funches. Go ahead, Jay.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you today?
Good.
I just want to say that I recently attended a seminar with Dr. Bryant Marks of Morehouse University. You know, it was directly targeted at implicit bias. Very, very good presentation. And I've taken the Harvard test, and they're very interesting tests. But the thing that about the test that kind of makes me go, is that the first thing that you do is you put in your all your own pedigree information and demographics. And in taking the test, it just makes me wonder if the taking of the test itself is somewhat biased. Is that taken into account with the results of the test? And also, you know, going back to the story of the elevator, it's like I'm just wondering if the implicit, if that story is not only displaying the implicit bias of the man in the elevator as much as the woman.
Okay, I'm going to go to your first question first. Mm-hmm. The bias with the Harvard test, you do enter in who you are first. And it's not just cross, like if you take the racial test, it's not just cross racially, because they show there are people who are, let's say, black people who have taken the test who show that they have biases against black people. Mm-hmm. You know, they just want to know when they do the demographics, they want to know who's taking the test. So it just shows.
It seems to me that it would be better if they gave you the results and then took in your demographic information, because that even if you think about it, it gives people. It gave me this idea. It gives people the idea that those that information might bias the test itself.
Well, as someone who does research, I want you to think about it this way. Let's say you took a test, you took the test, and then you got a result you didn't like. Would you be, how likely would you to be to give me your information after you got your result?
Well, I still would, but I mean,
would most people though?
That may be true, but still, it just, like I said, it, if there's a way to do it without, you know, it, like I said, it just brings up the idea to me that, you know, and I don't believe that necessarily that it's true. I'm just saying it just puts that little thought in my head.
And I respect that. And to your second point, you know, like I said from the beginning, all of us have biases. My thing is, how do our biases impact our behavior? Now, when Questlove got on that elevator, he never saw this woman before. He did not see her as a threat. That's why he put his key card in and was going to push a floor for her. He didn't see her as a threat. And he saw her potentially, and when she didn't indicate a floor, his first thought was, ooh, I've got a new neighbor. I need to be the welcome wagon, you know? And so that, you know, his biases were toward seeing her as not a threat, you know, seeing her potentially as a new friend, as a potential friend. So, I mean, biases are not just negative. Biases can be positive. I have a positive bias towards strawberry ice cream. I see strawberry ice cream, I'm like, I see a commercial, I want to go to Cold Stone and get some strawberry ice cream. You know, we can have biases in both directions. We're talking about, you know, biases against things. We also have biases towards things. So, yes, he could have had a positive bias towards a woman.
Jay, did you think that there was something negative on Questlove's part there?
Well, I don't know. But it's like, I'm not leaping to the conclusion either, that the conclusion seems to be being leapt at. And I would reserve judgment to talk to that woman. Maybe she just doesn't talk to people, or, you know, maybe she doesn't trust anybody at first.
Okay.
But maybe there's some totally different reason, and to make the assumption that it was negative, that's not right. You shouldn't be always jumping to the negative conclusion. Maybe you should just, because what I try to do is I try to put myself in the shoes of the other person and go, huh, I wonder.
Yeah, and
I don't think that happened there. I think that we jumped to a negative conclusion that I think without really any basis whatsoever.
But Jay, can I just ask you a question, and I'll let Melanie respond as well? I understand the point you're making. What you're saying is, in this isolated case, maybe there's a whole other reason that she avoided Questlove, and maybe it's unfair for Questlove to assume. Mm-hmm. But what if you are a tall black male, and this happens to you every day? And what if 1 out of 20, what if 3 out of 20, what if 4 out of 20 times, it's not because of your race or your size or whatever it is, that there's something else going on? I understand in one case, I'm with you that we got to be careful, it's one case. But what if this happens every day? Because I promise you, as a white male, that has never happened to me. You know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying, but I can tell you that being a white male, I'll never be a black male. I'll never be a female or a black female. But what I was once upon a time was a soldier in uniform. Mm-hmm. And this was pre-9/11, when soldiers in uniform did not carry a very positive connotation. And I was on the wrong end of implicit biases on more than one occasion. So whereas I've never lived it to the extent that some people have, I lived it to a certain extent. So when I went to college and I got my degree and I've done my research, my research topic was people's perceptions based on appearance, which is, you know, what we're talking about. And I believe, you know, it's like the things that I have done have absolutely borne out that people make decisions based on appearance all the time. That's the first thing that you do. You see something and you form an opinion in your head before you give it any kind of serious thought. Having said that, like I said, jumping to me, kind of a negative conclusion, I don't know that that's the first thing that I would do without further information.
And like, okay.
You know, it's easy to do, and it's like, again, we all do it to a certain extent, but I don't know. It's just a hard leap for me to take.
Jay, thanks for your service, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. You're welcome.
And thanks for the phone call. Go ahead, Melanie.
You know, what I want people to understand is that one of the best predictors of future behavior is past behavior. So if you have an experience that of the last 100 times that you've been in a situation, you've seen this behavior, it's been because of this thing, most times people will say, okay, this next time it's going to be this way. And so when people are faced with seeing things that could potentially be biased, a lot of times we want to take it and just look at this one isolated incident. But if Questlove, as being, I think he's like 6'3", you know, too well into the 200s of pounds, and he has this wild afro. And if he is experiencing the last 100 times he experienced it, he experienced women clutching their purse or crossing the street. That is a logical inference for him to make. You know, that this is what's going to happen. And what we have to do is we have to see things in context. We can't keep saying, well, this one isolated incident, this one, because that's what happens when people are talking about the bias that's happening with young black men being killed by law enforcement. They say, well, that was an isolated incident. So how many isolated incidents have to happen before we say that there is a pattern? You know, I don't want to jump into that fray, but I need to put it out there to say, how many isolated incidents does it take before we establish that there is something going on?
Let me get Kathy and Henrietta next up. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi. I'm calling because I wanted to confess that, being from Henrietta, I have a natural implicit bias towards people from Pittsburgh. And so when I heard the recent incident at Cobbs Hill about the young man being assaulted, totally didn't surprise me that it was someone from Pittsburgh, because I have my bias against them as being kind of exclusionary and racist. And I do have a couple of friends from Pittsburgh that they kind of overcome their Pittsburgh background, and they're actually nice people. But my bias is that most people from Pittsburgh are like that. So I think, you know, everybody has these biases, and you need to recognize them.
Well, thank you, Kathy. And sure, we can have bias. If I search myself, I probably can find bias against towns. You know, there's probably east side, west side biases. Some might be more explicit, but some may be implicit. We probably don't even realize on a day-to-day basis. Yeah?
Yes, I mean, we all have tons of biases that come from how we grew up and things that we have. You know, I would say that your bias around Pittsburgh may be an explicit bias, you know, more so than an implicit bias, because it's, you know, because it's a very specific town or whatever. It could be, you know, but my thing is, I'm thankful that that you're recognizing it. And so that because with you recognizing it, it gives you the opportunity when you meet new people, you know, that you can say, well, I've met this person. This person may be nice, and they're not exclusionary, you know, and they can also be from Pittsburgh. Both of those things can be true. And so, our implicit biases are, again, these biases that that we don't even realize that we don't, that this is why people have cognitive dissonance when they're confronted with them, because we don't realize that they're there. And then when we're confronted with them, we want to find out other reasons, because like another caller said earlier, we don't want to be associated with thinking, particularly with racial biases or, you know, other kinds of exclusionary biases, that we are that bad, because we say that those things are bad and we don't want to be associated with the thing that's bad or the creation of other.
We are almost out of time. Our phones have been basically filled the entire hour, and I couldn't get through nearly all the calls that we had, so I apologize about that. But Melanie, just in our last 30 or 40 seconds or so, some final thoughts. We've posted, as I said, the implicit bias test on Twitter if you want to take a look at that. Final thoughts for the audience on the subject.
We all have implicit biases. They're learned behaviors. They can be unlearned. Three things you can do. One, when you see yourself doing these things, call yourself on it. Ask yourself those hard questions. Why am I doing this? Put yourself in situations with people who are not like you or around things that are around your biases. And three, do some work, do some research to find out about that thing that you didn't know about, that you had that bias, because you can gain some more information and some more insight that can lead to reducing your bias.
And it can work.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, Melanie Funches. And again, her TEDx talk, we'll post that as well. I always appreciate the conversation.
Me too. Thank you for this opportunity.
Melanie also has one of the best radio voices, doesn't she? You could put your voice in a bottle and pour it on pancakes. It is.
Aw, thank you.
Really, I love talking to Melanie Funches. And thanks for all the calls. As I said, I got through just about as many as we could, but boy, a lot of interest in this subject. Both hours. So thanks very much. Rob Braden, the engineer of the broadcast, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon, and we'll talk with you Wednesday on Member Supported Public Radio.